From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Harvey wreaked havoc on the Texas Gulf Coast this weekend, killing residents, injuring scores more, damaging homes and businesses. But the worst may be yet to come. Historic and catastrophic flooding. Several feet of rain forecast in some parts of South Texas. It's a low-lying region, worsening the storm's impact, but urban sprawl and climate change also play a role. This hour on Point, Harvey's aftermath and the hazards of huge storms. You can join us on air or online. Were you in the path of Harvey? Were you affected by the flooding? Are you worried the next storm might hit you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll have continuing updates on Harvey and the Texas Gulf Coast from NPR. And joining me first from Houston is Andrew Schneider. He's a reporter with Houston Public Media, and he's been trapped by floodwaters in his Midtown Houston apartment. Andrew Schneider, welcome to On Point and for making time for us while you're dealing with the storm personally.
Hi, Sasha.
So as I understand it, you live on the, third and fourth floors of an apartment building in Houston?
Yeah. The condo complex is actually located right next to one of the main highways, or what's usually one of the main highways, US 59. It's now waterfront property. Essentially what happened is with a lot of the rivers around Houston, one of the rivers at the edge of this Braes Bayou flooded over its banks, went straight up the highway, and it's now turned the entire thing up until a couple of exits north of where I am into just a lake. And it's been like that for at least 36 hours now.
And if you were to walk out the door of your building or to try to walk out the door, what would you encounter?
Well, at this point, the water that had flooded into the streets has gone down. It was actually, it looked more like a swamp around here yesterday, but the rain's been coming in bands, and when it tapered off yesterday, that allowed some of the drains to relieve some of the immediate pressure. So what we're seeing around town now, this part of town, a lot of it is debris that's been washed in from all over the place. Also, a lot of garbage cans that have floated down the block, as you might expect in any heavy rainstorm. But oddly enough, we're actually seeing occasional traffic, even though the mayor and the county judge, who's our senior county official here in Harris County, has been warning people to stay off the roads because you never know when the rain is going to pick up and the flooding is going to start again.
And do you have a sense of whether people are trying to get to their jobs, they're trying to get groceries? Why would people venture out in this?
No, I think at this point most people are simply trying to stay safe. We actually did have a bit of a big break on Saturday, which is the first full day that the hurricane was onshore. It had almost completely stopped raining here, and a lot of people ventured out. If they hadn't gotten enough supplies the first time, they made a second run. But most people are either staying home, or if they still have homes, a lot of people, unfortunately, have had to evacuate. We've got emergency shelters that the Red Cross and others have set up around the area. I did, unfortunately, when I got outside to speak to a few people yesterday, and there are several areas particularly close to some of the major rivers like Buffalo Bayou that had to flee and don't have a home at the moment to hole up in.
We have a piece of sound from a volunteer in Dickinson, Texas. This is a man named Clint Winger, and he said he's been using his private boat to try to assist first responders as they try to rescue people stranded by floodwaters.
Just got to look out for everybody. It's overwhelming. The amount of rain is too much for the first responders. They need help.
Andrew Schneider, are you seeing any of that? People, sort of private citizens going out to try to make sure people are okay, checking on homes?
Yeah, that's one of the few positive aspects to this horrible story. Early yesterday, Judge Ed Emmett, again, he's the senior official for Harris County, which is where Houston is located, actually issued a public call for anyone with boats or other high water vehicles to help out. The problem here is that for all the state, federal, and local response, the government officials are pretty much overwhelmed. So, a lot of people are stepping up and assisting with the efforts like that man in Dickinson.
We also have a piece of sound from the Texas governor this morning. This is Greg Abbott. He told CBS News that the federal government is providing a lot of assistance in the response to Harvey.
The engagement and response by the president, the White House, by his cabinet, and by FEMA have been actually remarkable. We begin working with them a week or two in advance of this, and I've been in constant contact with either the White House or FEMA on a daily basis. And they provided Texas everything that we need. Whenever Texas asked for anything, the answer was yes.
Andrew Schneider, from what you can gather from the apartment vantage point in your apartment where you seem to be a bit homebound, can you tell whether it seems like there's appropriate rescue efforts going on out there? Are there people who seem stranded, or is there a pretty good outreach program going on at this point?
Well, one of the most constant sounds here is helicopter blades. And as far as the federal response goes, probably the most visible aspect of that has been Coast Guard helicopters that's been helping to get people off their roofs. We've had, at the last report, somewhere between 1,500 to 2,000 people that have been airlifted if they've had to climb onto the roofs of their houses. It's difficult to say as far as the other aspects, just in terms of FEMA. That's the sort of thing that, you know, that usually plays out in the aftermath of the storm. And until the rain actually goes down, we're not going to know how much help we need.
We have a caller from Houston. This is Matt. Matt, we hope you're safe. Let us know what you're seeing and exactly where you are.
Hi, Sasha. Yeah, I'm in Houston, kind of the western part of Houston. It is the absolute craziest storm I've ever seen. Last 2 days, we've got about 30 inches, which is about half of what Houston's supposed to get a year. It started to pool up in the backyard and came up the driveway. So I got out and I kind of dug a trench to get the water from the backyard into the front yard, and was out there at my neighbors who have single-story homes, and it was rising kind of high. So we started moving everything up to the second story and cleared out some extra bedrooms. And we kind of watched the storm together, because since they have a single-story home, we got kind of nervous that they were going to get flooded out. The floods kind of surrounded the whole entire subdivision, so there's no leaving you if you wanted to. So luckily around 2 a.m., though, the water started to recede. There's about a four-hour lull in rain. So now we're just waiting to see how the Barker reservoir release, which I think the Army Corps of Engineers plans on releasing around 2 p.m. today, how that's going to affect the bayou that's near our house. It was crested over last night, so, just hoping it doesn't get any more rain.
Matt, when you say that some people are beginning to move things to a second floor, does that mean they already are getting water into their first floor, or have the houses been able to keep the water out for so far?
No, I moved all my stuff to the second floor, so I started getting water just because it was pooling around my house, and then I dug the trench, and that did a pretty good job of having the water recede.
Did you have water in your living room, your kitchen, actually inside your home?
Oh, I had water in the living room. Carpet's all wet, so got to get rid of that. But it's luckily now it's started to recede, but we'll see if we keep getting more rain. The ground's just so saturated, and everything's, the reservoirs are just so full, I don't know how much more really can take. But we moved everything to the second floor, and then we were talking with our neighbors last night. If they got flooded out, we have, two extra bedrooms to start moving people into our second floor. People only have single-story homes.
Yeah, that's great. So neighborly outreach. Matt, thanks for calling. It's good to hear that there's a community effort going on down there. And Andrew Schneider, what Matt raises an interesting point, which is though even though the water may be receding, or as you put it, the rain's coming in bands, the concern about the storm is that this storm is basically stalled in the area. And whereas the hope would be that it clears out, it's just sitting there on top of the Houston area, and rain may continue to come or may leave and then circle back. Is that one of the big issues? Andrew Schneider, you still with us? I think we've lost Andrew. It's hard to know with the weather situation down there what it's like for people to try to keep their phone lines and their internet going. So we are going to try to get him back and hear how that's going. I think we've gotten Andrew Schneider back. Andrew, are you with us?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Unfortunately, the rain has been playing havoc with the phone service around here. My home station actually had a lot of technical problems.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. So you may have missed this. I was saying that one of the things our caller Matt pointed out is that the rain seemed to have been receding, which might sound positive. But as you said earlier, Andrew, the rain is coming in bands. And the issue here is that it's a storm stalled on top of the Houston area, which means the rain keeps coming. And even if it cycles out, there's a concern it's going to cycle back. Tell us what you're hearing about that kind of forecast.
Yeah, I've actually seen references to this as a zombie Hurricane Harvey. It's you know, which strikes me as a particularly appropriate way of referring to it, because even before it approached Houston, you know, people were talking about this as, you know, possibly, you know, dying out in the Gulf of Mexico, and then it came back to life and regained strength to a full, you know, Category 4 hurricane. It's, you know, now back down to tropical depression level, expected to drop beyond that. But the rain keeps falling, the storm refuses to die, and we're still feeling the effects.
Andrew, if you wanted to go out and get food, could you do that? It would just be possibly against the advice of emergency officials, but as you said, you're seeing some people out in their cars. How safe is it even to venture out and restock?
Well, the difficult thing at this point is you have no idea which roads are flooded. So, you know, the roads are around Midtown may look completely clear, but trying to get further into downtown or other parts of town where a supermarket or something like that might be located, you might well wind up running into standing water. And even if you get there, there's no guarantee that anything's going to be left. And like I said, we had quite a bit of advance warning for this storm, and then we had the break in the storm on Saturday. Between those two periods, there was a run on just about every supermarket in the area. And even on Saturday, most of those shelves were half-stocked, empty. Nobody's been able to restock.
I can imagine. And I think it's important to note, you mentioned standing water. There's also the risk of rising water. We've heard about some deaths caused by people submerged in their cars. So that's a great caution for people who might be inclined to go out. You might find water suddenly rising. You're trapped in a car. We hope everyone will stay safe in Houston. That's Andrew Schneider, a reporter from Houston Public Media, who's been following the storm from his apartment where he's trapped by high floodwaters. Andrew, thanks for being here and making time for us.
Thanks, Sasha.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service you've heard about. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to all. They support a more sustainable food system, set the highest standards for ingredients, and make it easy and fun to cook. You decide which recipes and how many meals you want each week. Change, pause, or cancel anytime. Learn more at blueapron.com/onpoint. Go now and get your first three meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. We're discussing the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, which made landfall this past weekend along the Texas Gulf Coast. And NPR will continue to have ongoing updates on that storm. We also want to talk about the hazards of huge storms. In the aftermath of this one, what causes it? What's the science behind it? Is this part of a pattern of extreme weather? Is it just a cycle? Is it a little bit of all of that? To talk about that, we are joined by a pair of meteorologists who have been following the storm. One of them is John Nielsen Gammon. He is the climatologist for the state of Texas, and he's a professor of atmospheric sciences at Texas A&M University. He's joining us from College Station, which is also dealing with rainfall from Harvey. John Nielsen Gammon, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you.
And with us from Athens, Georgia, is Marshall Shepard, director of the Atmospheric Sciences Program at the University of Georgia. He's also host of the talk show Weather Geeks on the Weather Channel. And he's a weather and climate contributor to Forbes. Marshall Shepard, welcome to you also to On Point.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
John and Marshall, could you first talk to us a little about the science? So when you began seeing this on your screens, on your modeling devices, let us know what you saw developing. John, can you start us off?
Sure. Of course, everybody seemed to be focused on the eclipse at the beginning of last week, but we had a former tropical storm called Harvey that had formed in the Atlantic Ocean, and it had been weakened, and its remnants had drifted across the Caribbean and across the Yucatan Peninsula. It produced a lot of rain there. But the models were forecasting the storm to then come into a favorable environment and intensify over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. And I've taken to calling this sort of storm a short-fuse hurricane, where it forms and intensifies rapidly and then makes landfall all within a three-day period. And those are particularly dangerous because there's very little time to prepare. People tend to want to see a storm far in advance to be able to plan for it. But this one, even though the computer models were forecasting it to develop, it wasn't expected to develop so rapidly and become quite so intense.
If there had been more time to prepare, what do you think Texas would or should have done differently?
Well, the main problem with this storm is, of course, the rainfall as we've experienced. And what that does for emergency response is it makes it hard to go from place to place because so many of the rivers are out of their banks. There's so much street flooding, road closures. So assets needed to be pre-positioned ahead of the storm. In other words, you had to bring the relief efforts and the rescuers to the location before the event actually happened. And that was hard to do with a storm like this, partly because of the timing and partly because the rain was forecast to be so heavy over so wide an area. So people had to be distributed broadly across much of the state. And then when it turned out that Houston was going to be ground zero for the heavy rainfall, it was difficult to move people around.
Right. And Marshall Shepard, could you weigh in? Because when people think hurricanes, I think they tend to worry about extremely strong and damaging winds. That's certainly a factor. But in this storm, the rain that has followed and that just keeps inundating the region without sign of leaving for days is another massive secondary factor. Tell us about that piece.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote in Forbes last week that this was going to be a 1-2 punch, and I was more worried about the two, and that's the rainfall. In fact, when I heard that this went up to a Category 4 hurricane, part of me got a little nervous, not because of the damage associated with a Cat 4, which is in itself a problem. I was nervous because I felt that the media and the public might shift its focus to sort of this notion of a hurricane, Cat 4 hurricane landfalling, and then once you started hearing the inevitable, oh, it's downgraded or it's weakening, people would let their guard down. And I feel that to some degree, perhaps in some locations and with some officials, that may have happened. We had been hammering home for over a week almost that the big floods, I mean, we were talking feet of floods, was going to be the problem in this area. National Weather Service Director Louis Uccellini, I heard a press conference from him. He said they were talking to their emergency managers as early as last Sunday about the possibilities. And I know many of us in social media and other places were too. So we always saw this. This was not a surprise. We should not be seeing any headlines saying came without warning or we didn't know where it was going. We had a clear indication where it was going and, frankly, what it was going to do, and it's doing it.
The mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, had a press conference yesterday in which he defended his decision not to order an evacuation before the city was hit by this. And here's what he said.
When you combine Houston and Harris County, you literally cannot put 6.5 million people on the road. If you think the situation right now is bad, you give an order to evacuate, you are creating a nightmare.
Now, John Nielsen Gammon, can you give us a sense, to whatever degree you can feel like you can weigh in on response, given what you saw coming on the radar, do you feel like this required an evacuation, or is it a smart move not to put so many people on the road, as the Houston mayor says?
I think it probably was a reasonable decision not to evacuate the city. And, of course, the whole city itself is not flooded. It's low-lying areas and places that drain slowly. You know, if we had known that Houston was going to get between 20 and 35 inches of rainfall over the previous 3 days, then there might have been calls for evacuation of low-lying areas. But until the storm played out, it was very difficult to tell where that was going to be. And I'm sure playing in the back of Mayor Turner's mind was the evacuation from Hurricane Rita back in 2005, which came just a short time after Katrina, and even though the storm made landfall well away from Houston, a large number of Houston residents evacuated despite not having a call for mandatory evacuation, and there were more deaths from an evacuation than from the hurricane itself.
Right, that sometimes people are safer staying put. Let's go to a caller John, sure, go ahead.
This is Marshall. I want to weigh in on that because there's another important point to follow up on, and that is National Weather Service statistics show that when we have flooding events, most people die in cars and by a significant amount. So I think this notion of, oh, everyone should have evacuated, that's an oversimplification because, as John mentioned with Rita and others, you know, though there have been deaths in the storm, I think the numbers have been relatively low compared to the scale of what we've seen. And I part of me wonders what that death toll might be like if you had 2, 3, 4 million people out there in cars stuck on the road.
Right. Another important point to hammer home. Sometimes when you leave your home, go out in a car, you simply don't know what you will encounter, and it could be worse than what you're leaving behind. Let's go to a caller from Houston. This is Angela. Angela, welcome to On Point. Tell us where you are and what you're seeing.
Hi, Sasha. I'm around 45 and I-10 right along White Oak Bayou, and it's completely over the basin now. I'm fortunate on my street. There's no flooding at all, just rain. But I've noticed, I've been on social media a lot and looking at hashtag Houston, hashtag Hurricane Harvey. It's just really sad to see because a lot of people are posting their addresses or addresses of people that they know that need to be rescued, family, elderly, children. But the first responders, I know that they're trying their best, the police, Coast Guard. It's just very overwhelming for them right now. But people, I've noticed that people are really coming together. My neighborhood, too, we're trying to get as much resources as we can. So it is pretty bad, but I think that people are trying to come together right now. So
Angela, good. It is great to see that. Angela, thanks for calling. We hope you stay safe. And now we have a caller from New Orleans in Louisiana. This is Connie. Connie, give us a sense of your geography in terms of where you are and what you're seeing.
Okay. I am in Algiers, which is directly across the river from the French Quarter. And we've had lots and lots and lots of rain, but no flooding, as I'm sure you're aware. Several weeks ago, the pumps failed, and a section of the city, mid-city, got flooded twice in just a matter of a couple of weeks. And so I'm sure there are plenty of people over there biting their fingernails, hoping that these bands of rain don't head this direction, because the pumps are not fixed yet, and I don't know how it happened that we got to this part of the storm season and don't have working pumps, but there it is. But I'll tell you, Sasha, I'm really concerned about my niece, who is in Pearland, and I have not been able to get in touch with her.
And where is Pearland relative to Houston?
Pearland is southeast of the city of Houston.
A suburb? Suburb, basically?
It's a sub. Must be a suburb, yeah. And it got a lot of flooding, and she is in a wheelchair. She has myasthenia gravis, which is a paralysis. And when I spoke to her on Saturday, the subdivisions around them had flooded, but her street was okay. But then I got a text from her on Sunday about 3 a.m. saying that the bayou across the way had started to overflow, and it didn't look good. And I have not been able to get in touch with her since. She lives in a two-story house, but her husband injured himself. I don't know how she could possibly get up to the second story. I have called every agency I could think of to try to find out if her section of Pearland has indeed flooded. She said they didn't have provisions in the house. There was no extra water, and she is totally, she's so vulnerable. I saw those pictures this morning of the people in the nursing home in Dickinson, and that would not be unlike what would happen to my niece.
Connie, we hope your niece is okay, and I think this is also a reminder that as much as we want first responders to be there, it's important for there to be a community effort, too, within the bound of safety. So I hope the community will come together and help. Marshall Shepard and John Nielsen Gammon, I want to talk a little about why we're seeing so much flooding. I mean, certainly part of this is geography, it's topography. But we have a piece of sound from a professor of marine sciences and urban planning at Texas A&M Galveston. This is Sam Brody. He told NBC News yesterday that a human element is driving and exacerbating flood losses along the Texas Gulf Coast. Here he is.
We're adding about 100,000 people a year. And with those people come parking lots, pavement, rooftops, roadways, and that makes it very difficult for the water to drain slowly and then into the bayous, into the bay.
So, John and Marshall, when we no longer have the exposed earth to help soak up the water, give us a sense of how much development, growth, human impact is factoring into this storm.
Yeah, I'll take that one first, John, if you don't mind, because I've done a lot of work on this topic in urban response, urban meteorology, urban hydrology. You think back to the water cycle we learned about in third, fourth grade, when you increase the amount of urban impervious surfaces, as cities like Houston and here in Atlanta, where I am, and others are, you are sort of shutting off that infiltration process in the water cycle, where you get water infiltrating into the soils, the impervious surfaces, the pavement, the parking lots. You have more runoff into at a faster rate into the streams, lakes, and rivers, and they get full, and then you that water has nowhere to go when the soil is saturated, when you have impervious surfaces, and the systems are full, and you see urban flooding. And so I've long written about this in some of my scholarly published work. That I always talk about urban flooding as an equation that includes what falls from the sky, the urban impervious surfaces, and how effective stormwater management systems have engineered their removal of water. And there are some critical assumptions about that engineering in terms of this notion of stationarity. That is, it's going to rain in 1970 the same way it does in 2017. And whether that's the case, I think it's starting to be questioned.
So I think that also raises the question of what have we learned from previous devastating storms like Katrina? John, in your experience, did we take away lessons from that that are now being applied in hopes that the damage from this one won't be as damaging?
Well, Katrina was a rather different storm. Most of the flooding was fairly sudden from the storm surge and levee failure. But I've seen a lot of intelligent response from that with advice from people from this storm. For example, the media has been widely broadcasting people, if your water is rising in your home, don't go into the attic. Go up onto the roof, because it was known that a lot of people got trapped in the attics in New Orleans, and with nobody to tell that they were in there and no way to get out, they actually drowned within their attics. So at least that lesson has been taken to heart.
John, I think I read an article in which you were quoted saying that you had to go back about 50 years, about a half century, to find a storm comparable to this one. Am I remembering correctly that that was you having to search back that far in history?
Well, I've certainly been doing a lot of research on heavy rainfall to try to find analogs to this storm. And let me tell you what I come up with. In terms of the widespread area, the duration, there's so much water involved that the best way I can describe it is in terms of the Mississippi River. If you imagine how much water is flowing out of the Mississippi River constantly, and you dump that onto an area that's only, say, 100 miles by 200 miles rectangle, that's going to cause flooding, obviously, because they're not expecting that much water. Now, the heaviest storm that I've been able to find in historical record is Hurricane Beulah, which made landfall in Texas in 1967. That produced, over a five-day period, the equivalent of three Mississippi rivers flowing onto that size of an area of South Texas and also parts of northern Mexico. Other places may be familiar with heavy rain, like, for example, Hurricane Floyd in North Carolina back in 1999 was about 2.5 Mississippi rivers. Right now, as of 7 p.m. last night, Harvey was up to 2.5 and counting, with the forecasts having it going over 3.5 Mississippi rivers, which would be exceeding the previous heaviest storm ever by about half of the typical discharge of the entire Mississippi River.
So, John, in about 30 seconds, if you could, where do you land on whether this is just cyclical? Is this how much is human factor, or is this extreme weather changing patterns factoring into this?
Well, it's definitely not cyclical. Hurricanes are about the most erratic phenomenon that you can find in weather on a year-to-year basis. Most of it, in terms of amount, was natural, but I've found in Texas about a 5% increase in the magnitude of extreme rainfall due to climate change over the past century. So in terms of the 30 inches we're seeing, perhaps 1.5 of those inches were due to climate change. And of course, that's an extra amount of water we don't need.
That's John Nielsen Gammon. He's the state climatologist in Texas and a professor of atmospheric sciences at Texas A&M University. John, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And also with us has been Marshall Shepard, director of the Atmospheric Sciences Program at the University of Georgia. Also very good to have you.
Thank you.
We'll be back after a break. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. President Trump will visit the Texas Gulf Coast tomorrow in the aftermath of Harvey, which has left several people dead, injured many more, and has brought torrential rainfall and catastrophic flooding to the region. You can join the conversation. Is President Trump's visit Tuesday coming too soon in your view or not soon enough? What do you want to see from the administration, from federal agencies as they deal with Harvey? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Austin, Texas, is Douglas Brinkley, the presidential historian and a professor of history at Rice University in Houston. He was a professor at Tulane University in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and he's author of the 2006 book, The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Douglas Brinkley, welcome back to On Point.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sasha.
So we want to get your take, certainly, as a presidential historian, in terms of how presidents decide when to come into disaster areas, when they know the time is right. But you also have such a unique perspective, having been through one of these storms down south, that I want to start with that personal perspective. Can you tell us what you experienced during Katrina?
Well, I was teaching at Tulane University when Katrina was coming in the Gulf, and you saw that it was going to be a big hurricane. And I boarded up my house, and I did what was then called a vertical evacuation. I went up to my mother's in-law's condominium overlooking the Mississippi River, thinking that that building had a generator. Well, lo and behold, Katrina came in, and your previous guest was talking about the Mississippi River. Well, I saw the Mississippi roaring backwards, going in the opposite direction due to the power of Hurricane Katrina. I then went out and started working as a first responder in the Lower Ninth Ward and Central City and the like, and started just talking to everybody about the dysfunction of New Orleans and the damage to Mississippi and Alabama. We need to remember that in Katrina, nearly 3,000 people were killed. Right now, we're dealing with a few folks in Houston. So if there is any good news right now, is at this juncture, the death toll is nothing like Katrina. But, I'm a big fan of John Steinbeck's writings on the Dust Bowl and in Grapes of Wrath. You know, you realize the Dust Bowl wasn't a day. Katrina or Harvey's not about a day or a week when the storm hit. People in those cities, both Houston now and New Orleans, you know, over a decade ago, live in that horrific moment for maybe a decade, because you get mold, you get debris, there's electric wire problems, things don't get back to normal as quickly as they should.
Right. In fact, we had a comment posted on our website, and someone just says, FEMA says they'll be in Houston for about 3 years. I mean, this could be a long, long aftermath of helping people clean up, and as you say, things like mold, which may not be noticed right away. So it's a long, long-running impact. Douglas Brinkley, go ahead.
I was just going to mention, you know, people in the Gulf South that live in the hurricane belt, you know, they almost make their lives. When they talk about their lives, people will say, you know, oh, I was born around the time of Carla, or, you know, here's what I did when Allison hit, or here's what I did with Katrina and Rita. In many ways, it's just part of life in the Gulf South, but I do believe climate change has made the freakishness of the rain coming and going and hanging and drenching and flooding of Houston maybe, I think, a more of a climate event than perhaps we could have considered Katrina.
Douglas Brinkley,
Katrina was a man-made disaster, a lot of it, the levees breaching, you know, in the
right
city and in the city flooding.
We have a few callers. Let's get another sense of what they're experiencing down there. This is Johanna calling from Dayton, Texas. Johanna, tell us where you are and what you're seeing.
Hi, Sasha. Yes, I'm about northeast of Houston. It's probably like an hour drive into the area. But what I just wanted to talk about was there's a lot of us that live in the rural area that have farms and ranches. And unfortunately, the flood is Unfortunately, the flood is destroying a lot of the livestock because of the water depth. Right now, I live by a river, and because of the depth of the water, most of the animals are drowning. That's just something you know, we talk about downtown and the flooding, and I just kind of wanted to bring that to attention.
This is something you're just having to kind of helplessly witness?
Yeah, unfortunately. Because our house itself, too, the water's, you know, on the whole main floor. We do have a second floor. That's kind of where we're taking shelter at. And the rest of the stuff outside, we just look out, and there's nothing we can do. They can't eat if there is anything still surviving. You know, our land is quite large. We can't see everything. But what we have seen, the pigs and goats and horses that we have aren't making it.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
They say that it's going to peak, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. There's actually
Wednesday, Thursday, and they can't eat, and so that's kind of our issue.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that. And there was a quite amazing video circulating online today of a giant herd of cattle being herded along a highway in order to try to get them away from floodwater. So there's some effort to help there. We also have a caller from Ohio with a perspective. This is Gary. Gary, do you have a connection down in Texas?
Yes, I do, Sasha. My brother lives in Friendswood, Texas, which is about halfway between Galveston and Houston. And my niece lives in Pearland. And I just wanted to respond real quickly to your previous caller, Connie, who has a relative in Pearland. My brother and his wife were evacuated from Friendswood on jet skis. His house is underwater, and he can't go back till it recedes. What they did was go to my nieces in Pearland, and they're not affected, at least at this point, not as badly as Friendswood was. Now, if the storm goes back out to the Gulf and regenerates, that may be another story. But right now, I just wanted to let Connie know that Pearland's in pretty good shape compared to the other places around them.
Good. We're glad to hear that. Gary, thank you. We hope your brother will be well. Douglas Brinkley, you're now at Rice University in Houston. Tell us what you're seeing. Are you seeing the impact of the storm?
Well, I'm teaching three classes at Rice, and so my last class was on Thursday, and most of the students have decided to stay on campus. It's really a dormitory-driven university, and that part of the city is in better shape than much. That's the area near the Medical District Memorial Park. It does not mean the waterways all around it, you know, are flooded. And a little bit like your caller was mentioning, there are pockets of places that aren't flooded in the greater Houston area, and those are the high-ground places people are trying to get to. As for that caller about the farm animals and livestock dying, it's horrific, and I feel my heart pours out for her to have to witness that. I mentioned the Dust Bowl, but when Woody Guthrie wrote about it, he was our balladeer of the Dust Bowl. He wrote often about how all the animals died, and nobody would later chronicle it, but how the dust would get in their nose, and you'd have to watch all of your livestock perish, and what a hard thing that is for a farmer. And I do worry about rural parts of Texas, because the intensity right now is in Houston and some of the more populated suburbs, but some of these rural communities have no electricity. They're isolated islands of water, and more rain is coming. So we really do need more emergency first responders from all the states to come and try to help work social media. Try to get yourself plugged in, and particularly anybody with a boat that can go and save people in some of these rural areas, in addition to the urban scape.
Douglas Brinkley, the White House announced yesterday that President Trump will visit the Texas Gulf Coast tomorrow, Tuesday. The Homeland Security Advisor, Tom Bossert, told ABC's This Week yesterday the president will only go where he won't get in the way of first responders.
We certainly won't go in a place where we would prevent life-saving activities from taking place. The president wants to go to show his support. He doesn't want to go to get in the way. And he's been very clear about that.
Since that comment yesterday on air, the president's office has announced that he will not go to Houston, that he will go in other areas to try to give Houston some space. Can you give us a sense, Douglas Brinkley, of how high the stakes are for presidents when they need to weigh in on natural disasters? What do they say? What do they do? How do they decide when to go and not be a disruption?
Well, Sasha, it's extremely important for U.S. presidents to kind of grab a hold of the bully pulpit, pull America together. In many ways, the president's the human heart of the nation, and they need to constantly be conveying information, prayer, concern, and direct action. The presidents that handle these catastrophes most successfully do a lot of hugging of people that are affected by the storm. You need to show people the emotion. When Lyndon Johnson went into New Orleans after Hurricane Betsy in 1965, he went on a boat, even at nighttime in a blacked out neighborhood, and put flashlights on homes and said, "This is your president. Come in the boat. I'm here to help you." We remember when George W. Bush, after Katrina, went and wrapped his arm around the firemen in the famous bullhorn moment. So I would recommend that the president and first lady, and she's Melania's coming with Donald Trump to Texas, make sure they meet some people that were victims of the storm to generate the feeling, a deeper feeling of caring. Often presidents like to think, I don't want to be in a problem. I want to stay in Austin or San Antonio away from everybody. And that's better than doing a flyover like George W. Bush did during Katrina. But you want to be with people and talk to them that were victims of something like Hurricane Harvey.
Douglas Brinkley, in anticipation that you might mention those very memorable presidential visits, we pulled sound of the two events you just mentioned. One was President Lyndon Johnson, LBJ, September 1965. He visited New Orleans in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Betsy, and he pledged the full resources of the federal government to help the city and the state.
I put aside all the problems on my desk to come to Louisiana as soon as I could. I have observed from flying over your city how great the catastrophe is that you have experienced. Human suffering and physical damage are measureless.
Douglas Brinkley, how do you rate that one? How do you assess that approach?
Well, that wonderful words he just said, but then it begins the action. When I wrote a book about Hurricane Katrina, I went all over the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans. And I was amazed how many old-timers, people in their 80s or late 70s, would tell me, "Oh, I remember when Lyndon Johnson was in our neighborhood. He was right over there," and started pointing, that many decades later, because the Johnson and Betsy said, "We care, I care, you matter most to me." And so it's a pretty good yard marker for presidents to follow, is get to people, show concern immediately. I personally was a little concerned with President Trump's use of Twitter over the weekend, marketing hawking a book about a sheriff and talking about the border wall. It seemed to me off message when our country was hit by a catastrophic Category 4 hurricane.
Although he also was tweeting quite a bit about the hurricane, I counted more than a dozen. But as you say, it was interspersed with comments about NAFTA and the wall. So it's been a little mixture.
Yeah, and I think he didn't realize how bad the rains were, so thought that you could do it 50-50. When a catastrophe like this happens, the Great Houston Flood, it's got to be 100%. Like Lyndon Johnson said, everything else is off my desk. This is my priority. And you have to really drive that point home, because it does make people in a difficult situation feel that federal help is coming, that FEMA is coming. You are in many ways the John the Baptist figure as president, saying, "I promise you, you're not going to be forgotten. We're doing everything to get your city back on its feet."
Douglas Brinkley, you also mentioned some comments that George W. Bush made after Hurricane Katrina. We have an excerpt of that as well. This is September 2005. He visited New Orleans just days after the hurricane, and he praised the response of the FEMA director, Michael Brown.
"I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Now, of course, many people may remember that 10 days after that, Brown resigned as director of FEMA because criticism was mounting that federal and state and local officials were slow in handling the aftermath. So is there a lesson there on speaking too soon, handing out praise too soon?
Absolutely. I mean, you want to talk in more generic terms, I believe, about the people of Texas are doing a great job. There's some things that are irrefutable. I mean, in Houston, the police has done magnificent working overtime during Hurricane Katrina. Much of the New Orleans Police Department fled the city with their cars. So you can cherry pick certain groups to praise right now, but I would be careful of, for example, overpraising the mayor of Houston at this moment, because there is going to be a national debate whether not ordering an evacuation was a good or bad thing. It is a city of 4 million people, and evacuation would have been very difficult. Nevertheless, You don't want to get yourself in a political box, but when the facts are coming in, right now is the moment of first response. More rain's coming. It's about saving lives, and you keep your focus on that. There'll be time later to give medals and awards to Hurricane Harvey heroes.
An on-point listener named Jack Pomerantz put a comment on Facebook that says this: I wonder if anyone is prepared for the climate refugees, because they are going to happen and it's probably going to be a nightmare. So that's another reminder that even though people may not have evacuated now, they may need to later when their neighborhoods and homes are inundated. Give us your sense of that secondary response on the part of the president, the aftermath.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, look, though, the cameras are all over Houston now. You turn on your TV and you're going to see catastrophic flooding. But we have short attention spans, and perhaps a month or 2 months from now, other things happen in the world, and greater Houston area can be easily forgotten. And not just Houston, Corpus Christi and Rockport and Port Aransas and the rest. So it's important that the president continue to come back to Texas, continue to put up the billions of dollars. It might even be noble for him to say we're going to delay thinking about the cost of a wall because we need to do a wall with Mexico, because we need to do a rebuild in the Gulf South of America. You know, it's a great time for Marshall Plan-like thinking. And I agree with the last comment. This is the age of climate refugees we're going to be seeing all over Africa, in the Middle East, and parts of our own country. I mean, the science community is whole. 99% are telling us we're living in a new age of climate change, and people are going to have to start questioning how close they want to live to the water.
That's damage. Right. A lot of ongoing impacts. That's Douglas Brinkley. He's a professor of history at Rice University in Houston. He was also history professor at Tulane University in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. We're glad to have you today. We'll continue our updates on NPR throughout the day. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.